This is Weekend Ozarks at Large for Sunday, November 18th, 2012. I'm Christina Thomas.
And I'm Kyle Kellums. KUAF is supported by Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art, celebrating the American spirit by uniting the power of art with the beauty of nature. The museum opens at 11 a.m. daily, except Tuesdays. More information available online at crystalbridges.org.
Ahead on Weekend Ozarks, 1123, November 23rd, a day dedicated to the Fibonacci number sequence. Plus, the final symphony concerts of the semester.
But first, residents of three Arkansas counties, Benton, Madison, and Sharp, who this month voted in favor of legal alcohol sales in previously dry counties, should be in excellent spirits, given that the tally went in their favor. But as Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports, if you want to get into the spirits business, you better be ready to follow some stiff rules.
Rock music blares as an employee at Weddington Liquor in West Fayetteville arranges bottles of whiskey this Monday morning in preparation for a busy week. The sales floor is organized, hard liquor to the left, wines on the right. Lots of micro-brewed and Arkansas-made beers fill chilled glass cases lining the walls. Weddington Liquor also sells retail alcohol to a private club in Rogers, but that contract will soon come to an end. That's because residents in Benton County voted 2-1 this election in favor of the manufacture or sale of intoxicating liquors. The ballot initiative called Keep Dollars in Benton County was funded by Stuart and Tom Walton, grandson heirs to the Walton family fortune. Together, they contributed more than $663,000. In Madison County, nearly 3,800 residents out of 6,600 registered voters were in favor of alcohol sales. And in Sharp County, nearly 3,890 voters out of 7,350 were in favor. And the Arkansas Alcoholic Beverage Control Board, which oversees licensure, is seeing a surge in permit applications. But Director Michael Langley says off-premise packaged liquor store permits are limited based on population. Madison County, with less than 16,000, can have just 3 liquor stores.
In Benton County's situation, it's eligible for 55 retail liquor package stores, which means they have the right to sell spirits to go.
And those applications will be made available beginning December 1st.
They'll fill them out. They'll complete a criminal background check. They'll submit their applications with their $2,000 during a time period that we set. After all the applications have been received and that time period ends, ABC will then go do a follow-up investigation to make sure that to verify everything that's contained in the applications. We will then, probably in April or May, seems to be the initial indication, have a drawing here in Little Rock in which we do a double-blind drawing to determine the order in which people will appear in front of the ABC board to have their applications considered.
The board will meet within 30 days of the drawing.
Once those hearings are held, then people will be issued their permits when their buildings are ready to open, when their businesses are ready to open, and then they'll begin to start selling alcohol. So you're looking at June or July to do that.
Madison County has no private clubs, but Benton County has more than 130. So what happens to them?
They continue as private clubs. The rules are relaxed in some things that they can do. If you drive by Benton County private club, their outdoor patios are hard to see in, or you can't see inside them. Those types of obstructions can be removed if, in 6 months, Benton County chooses to hold another election for liquor by the drink. They can do so, which will then open them with the ability to switch over from a private club permit to a restaurant mixed drink permit and be a for-profit company.
For 40 years, private clubs in Arkansas dry counties, by law, have had to purchase alcohol in-state, paying retail prices, but that practice changes as counties transition to wet.
They can apply for a retail beer permit and a restaurant wine permit, and once they receive those, or an on-premise wine permit, either one. And once they receive those, they can buy their beer or their wine directly from a wholesaler. However, they still have to buy their hard liquor from a retail package store until there's a liquor by the drink vote.
This election, Sunday liquor sales passed in Tonty Towns, Springdale, and Ozark. But in Boone County, which voted in favor of alcohol sales in 2010, the community of Lead Hill failed to pass a Sunday alcohol measure. Patrick Hill, assistant to Harrison Mayor Jeff Crockett, says the transition from dry to wet has not, which some had warned, led to more crime.
Indeed, none of those statistics increase as a result of alcohol sales. If anything, and it's very early to say to have any statistical reliability, but it seems to indicate that some of those numbers have even gone down as a result. Purchases for such alcohol, instead of having to drive to the border, are happening locally. It's minimizing, therefore, oftentimes the use of drunk driving to and from the border and coming back home. So in a way, it makes sense, but it is still early on to give any statistical reliability.
Hill says it took a good 5 months before package sales of liquor, beer, and wine were widely available, and potential sales tax revenue could be estimated.
I want to stress it's very estimated, but we're predicting an annual revenue off of alcohol to be roughly $300,000.
Which is all going into the general fund.
And as of this most recent election on November 6th, we are now able to sell liquor by the drink to invite franchises such as Applebee's or Red Lobster to be able to come to town.
But Boone County will likely see a drop in alcohol sales revenue because patrons in the south from Madison County won't have to travel north to purchase their beer, wine, and liquor. Kingston resident Bob Barton initiated the successful ballot initiative campaign titled Keep Money in Madison County.
We were very pleased that the people in Madison County seemed to agree with us.
And although Barton has ceased campaigning forever, he says he's had enough, he's now being queried by residents about how to secure alcohol sales permits.
Most of them are confused enough about what type of license it is that they want that it's going to take a little while, I think, for everybody to figure that out.
Barton doesn't believe alcohol sales will change things.
Honestly, I don't think it's going to change the local culture much at all. That was part of our reasoning behind changing the law, because there is no culture of dryness in Madison County. It's just we're legally dry. But the only thing that I think in the near term that will be apparent in changing the county is the convenience stores. Various different convenience stores around the county will undoubtedly put off-premises or beer for off-premises consumption in. But other than that, I don't think it's going to have a huge effect, and certainly not a real apparent one immediately, not at all.
Bob Barton expects a nice increase in county revenue, which he said during his campaign could be used to renovate a crumbling county courthouse and jail. Now, what happens if any of the new liquor stores fail? Arkansas Alcoholic Beverage Control Board Director Michael Langley.
Inventory, if a liquor store goes out of business, is usually sold to another liquor store, but it is sold in one bulk section. You can't continue to run it, or you can't just sell a piece of it. It's all sold to somebody else who wants to take it, but it's sold as a lot.
Residents in the three counties interested in home brewing can go into the business by opening microbreweries and even distilleries to manufacture alcohol.
If you want to open a brew pub, there are it's simply an application process through the state of Arkansas. They make application, they set up their establishment, they make sure, depending on whether it's going to be a brew pub or a distillery, they meet the requirements set by the federal government.
But restaurants that apply to sell alcohol are limited to what type? Confusing, right? But it's all spelled out on the state Alcoholic Beverage Control website. And Director Michael Langley warns those who apply for a new alcohol sales license will need to be patient because, for the first time since Prohibition, Arkansas now has a majority of wet counties. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
For more information, search the web for Arkansas Beverage Control.
No matter how hard some may try, money is inescapable. We use it to buy stuff, and most often we pay taxes with it. Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis takes a look at news stories from this week related to cities' tax revenue.
Of course, cities use tax money for operations, infrastructure, or a number of other things. At its meeting last Tuesday night, the Rogers City Council approved a purchase of 4 parcels of land for the city's Parks Department, a purchase totaling more than $400,000. City Parks and Recreation Director Barney Hayes says that the land buy next to Veterans Park in East Rogers will expand the park's sports offerings.
The acquisition of this property will add 4 additional small tracts of land there to give us the opportunity to add 3 additional fields, which that coupled with the 2 existing fields would give us a 5-field complex and make it a very nice facility. We would hope to develop that later in 2013 and turn it into a very nice soccer complex that we could be able to host regional tournaments. The fields would be irrigated and lighted.
Hayes says that the city was running out of space to accommodate all of the youth and adult soccer programs in the city.
We have one of the larger adult and also youth soccer programs in the entire state of Arkansas, and we're basically short right now on facilities. And during our 2011 bond issue, we had promised the voters that we would add some additional soccer playing area, and so this would fulfill our commitment.
The original plans for the sports park, which is nearing completion, included construction of soccer fields, but when construction estimates came in over budget, the fields were scrapped. Although the soccer fields aren't a part of the new sports complex on Dixieland Road, Hayes says that the park is almost ready for opening day.
Our first tournament there will be the end of January, our Snowball Classic. So far this year, we've gotten 17 tournaments booked on that site, and that's going to really dovetail into hospitality dollars for our hotel motel people. Those folks that come to these tournaments are going to buy hamburgers and pizza. And hopefully mom's going to want to buy some merchandise from our local merchants. So that should really dovetail into dollars for the city of Rogers through our sales tax.
And speaking of tax revenue, the Fayetteville Advertising and Promotion Commission doled out its annual fall round of event funding, provided by Fayetteville's 2% lodging and prepared food tax. But not everybody seeking funds from the commission walked away from the meeting with money to support their projects. Commissioners tabled a $1 million request by the University of Arkansas. The university asked the commission for money to help convert the old field house into a 650-seat performing arts venue. Marilyn Hefner is the president of the Fayetteville A&P Commission.
You know, we've been looking at that request since May, and I think that we were waiting originally on the Attorney General's opinion. That did come back, and it appears to be feasible for us to allocate money to the University for Fine Arts Center, not only because it supports the arts, but also because it's a public recreation facility. And I think that Commissioner Tennant asked that it go before the new City Town and Gown Committee. And the university said there was no rush in construction starting tomorrow. So we felt like, you know, we want to do our due diligence and make sure that we have all the questions and answers that the commissioners need before they make that decision.
Hefner says that the U of A is the number one tax collector in the city.
In 2011, total just from the football games was around an economic impact of around $49.5 million. And they are our largest tax collector with Chartwells. They contribute about $47,000 in hotel, motel, restaurant tax in 2011. And then Sodexo collected about $18,000 as well.
In other A&P news, Bentonville has seen a surge in its own hamburger tax collections. According to Bentonville A&P Commission documents, the first 9 months of 2012 saw a roughly 14% increase in revenues from the city's 1% prepared food tax and the 2% hotel and lodging tax. A&P Commission President Kayleen Griffith says that much of the increase in revenue can be traced directly or indirectly to Crystal Bridges.
Yeah, I think the opening has spawned development within our city, even not just our downtown, even our north entrance with the opening of Harps. I think we're seeing additional businesses kind of wanting to reap the benefits of having the number of visitors visiting Crystal Bridges.
In addition to the opening of Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art, Griffith says that 27 restaurants have opened in Bentonville in the past last year, a growth sector arguably sparked by the increase of tourism traffic in the city. But while Griffith predicts at least 1 to 2 years of continued growth in revenue, she says that continual development will be necessary to avoid a plateau in the growth of revenue.
I'd love to say that we're going to continue to see increase, but I'd like to have a realistic vision of it that we'll probably at some point flatten out, and we'll, you know, hopefully have a different type of marketing and enhance our marketing in some way. I do think that we're going to have a benefit with Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art and their traveling exhibits. With those changes, people are going to want to come back to our area to see those new exhibits, and it will continue to draw people to our community.
As far as economic impact goes, Griffith says that we are fortunate to have Crystal Bridges in Northwest Arkansas.
It has a huge impact on Bentonville, but I also think it has an impact on the state and the region with what's going on in each of the cities around us. You know, I've visited with other cities, and they've showcased that their numbers are up, and they think because of people coming to Crystal Bridges, and they're going to their cities also. So I do think that the numbers of people coming have influenced all of our areas and, you know, impacted all of our cities.
Griffith says that in recent years, the only year that revenue actually decreased was 2009. Aside from that, she says that revenue has grown at an average rate of 3-5% year over year. But hotel and restaurant taxes are only one form of revenue. As the city of Fort Smith deliberates on its 2013 budget, city administrators are looking to new revenue from the newly approved half-cent state highway tax to build and repair sidewalks within the city. Fort Smith Communications Director Tracy Winchell says that with turnback money coming to the city from the highway tax, the city is looking at improving other modes of surface transportation besides just highways, adding that several residents have requested sidewalk improvements.
In some neighborhoods, we need new sidewalks everywhere. It hasn't been something until recently that we've asked builders to participate in when they build residential or commercial areas. We add sidewalks as we make street and drainage improvements and do overlays a lot of times. But this summer, we've had a crew working downtown to repair some just really messed up sidewalks. And of course, downtown is a pedestrian area, but next, I think what we'll probably wind up concentrating on are neighborhood schools and things like that.
Winchell says that considering the city's annual budget for sidewalks has been around $200,000 for at least a decade, any additional revenue for sidewalks is more than the city currently has for the project. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Timothy Dennis.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas, and joining me now is Dr. Edmund Harris, a assistant clinical professor in the math department at the University of Arkansas, right?
Yep, that's it.
All right. Thanks for joining me. And I've invited you here because this Friday, November 23rd, is Fibonacci Day.
Yeah, well, I have to admit, when your email came in, it was the first time I'd heard of Fibonacci Day.
Well, I've started this series of picking a certain day of the week and, you know, kind of fun things. Like I started off with National Waffle Day, and I got to go to Waffle House.
Yeah.
And so, I look at all these interesting calendars.
Well, that's, it's an interesting way, and I think an interesting way to look at specific things through the year and change them around a bit. And,
right.
And the Fibonacci numbers are one of the most popular bits of mathematics, so it's the sequence is fairly simple. You start with the number 1, and you just add the two previous numbers before it. So, well, we only had a 1, so we can assume the other thing's 0. So you have 1, 1. Then you're adding 1 and 1 to get 2. Now the last two numbers are 1 and 2, so you get 3. The last two numbers are 2 and 3, so you get 5, 8, 13, and so on.
It is really simple. It's just if you know your basic addition.
Yep. And the nice thing is it's really simple, but this and some other patterns can lead into very advanced mathematics. And It's the important thing with one of the important things with the Fibonacci numbers is that if you take one number and divide it by the previous one, you get closer and as the Fibonaccis go on, it gets closer and closer to a number called the golden ratio.
Okay, so you mean not just in the beginning of it, like 13 divided by 8. So we're talking about further on in the sequence. And
well, it gets closer and closer to it, okay. This thing. So 13 by 8 would be one, a number pretty close. And then you take the next one, which would be 21 divided by 13, and so on like this.
Well, so what is the golden ratio?
So the golden ratio is, one of the things is architect's favorite number. And it's a particular proportion. The exact value is 1 plus the square root of 5 all over 2. But there's a geometric way to describe it. If you take a rectangle and you cut off a square, you're left with a rectangle of the same proportions.
Okay.
And this sort of similarity, the self-similarity property that it has, means it's very powerful for if you're designing buildings or shapes using this proportion, will give you a whole load of similarities and interesting behaviors. And people have made claims that it was one of the fundamental ideas in Greek architecture. Sadly, those are not, it's a hard to justify, but certainly in Christopher Wren's architecture in London, places like St. Paul's Cathedral and the churches he designed in London, he heavily used this proportion. And many architects today use it to help design their buildings. And you probably have this proportion in your pocket because it's also the proportion of a standard credit card.
Okay. That's funny.
In part because it has this reputation of being a very beautiful proportion. There's also, people have talked about it being the perfect proportion for beauty and trying to find it in great works of art. And some of that is it's difficult for me as someone who's constantly going out and trying to persuade people that mathematics is interesting and they should pay more attention. Then you have an area and people are paying a lot of attention to mathematics, saying it's awesome, it's cool. Well, no, actually, it's not really there. It is certainly in things like in sunflowers and other plants. Well, this comes back to the Fibonacci numbers, actually.
Right.
And if you look at the head of a sunflower.
So the large center.
Yeah.
On one of those tall sunflowers.
Yeah. And you'll see these sort of curly lines going round. And if you count the number of lines there are going round, that will be a Fibonacci number. Then you can sort of see lines coming the other way against them, and you count those. That will either be the previous Fibonacci number or the next Fibonacci number.
So, okay, so you count them going one way, and you get a Fibonacci number.
Yeah.
You count them going the other way, and you're going to get the one that was right before the number that you originally got or the one right after the one that you originally got. So earlier you mentioned Greek architecture. So this sequence was discovered or found, made a really long time ago. I mean, because Greek architecture is what goes all the way back to BCs.
Yeah.
Right? So do you know anything about the man, Fibonacci, and how he stumbled upon this sequence?
Well, he was also called Leonardo of Pisa. And actually, the Fibonacci numbers are not his greatest achievement at all. He was one of the key figures in bringing Arabic numerals into Europe, replacing the old Roman numeral system. And so that's a
Are those
a huge
the numbers
change.
We use now?
Yes.
Okay.
the interesting thing, one of the reasons that they didn't come in for a long time was because they were associated with Islam and they were considered to be, Arabic. And so people were, good Christians in Western Europe at the time said, no, we don't want this. But at some point, the greater usefulness of the system, it's a more powerful system. It's also a system that's easier to teach. If you think you have enough problems with doing arithmetic, try doing it in Roman numerals.
Right. I mean, I when I see a Roman numeral, I have to count.
But imagine doing a multiplication like VI times XVI. But in this book where he presents the system, one of the things he talks about is actually looking at rabbits and saying that you have rabbits and the rabbit you have pairs of rabbits.
Does this go to rabbits multiplying?
This is how the Fibonacci numbers come out.
Okay.
You have pairs of rabbits, and in each generation, the pair of rabbits have two babies. And they are babies for one generation, then they become adults. And then when they become adults, they'll pair up and they'll start having babies. And this is not a particularly good model of how rabbits actually breed, but it does give you the Fibonacci numbers, because if you think how many rabbits are there in each generation, well, it's the answer is how many rabbits were there in the generation before and the generation before that added together. So that would be your 2, 3, and so on. So that's where we get the Fibonacci numbers from, or why they're associated with his name.
I saw that like stockbrokers use it somehow in the stock market in predicting trades.
There's a variety of ways that it can come in. I tend to be a bit of a skeptic on some of these things. I know that the stock market thing, some people have been able to use it to make money. But I think making money in the stock market is more to do with magic than science. There's a lot of instinct, and but one of the interesting things that it will do for you, give you patterns that are not periodic. And so if you use this golden ratio, it's called an irrational number. You can't state it as a fraction. And so if you look at that behavior against a behavior that's happening, a behavior that's happening every golden ratio days against a behavior that's happening every day, you're going to get some different, your patterns aren't going to repeat. And that can be a useful, not repeating in your patterns can be useful in your trading.
I think I understand. what else? I mean, where do we see it in popular culture today? Are there other places?
Well, there are some people who use it in music. Again, you can use it as a time signature, as one that isn't going to resolve completely. It will come back sort of almost to itself, and then you can extend it. People have used it in music, in art and architecture, as we've discussed. It's, more concretely, it turns up in the pentagon. So if you draw a pentagon and then you take...
just
points,
the five-sided.
Yeah, the five-sided regular shape. And then you take the points which are two points which are two apart. Well, if you're, the edge of your pentagon is length one, this diagonal will be length golden ratio. And so in anything where you, any system of patterning, going back to, for example, Islamic tiling art, you're going to have this golden ratio turning up if you've got this rotation.
Okay. It sounds like it's everywhere.
It does. I think that's what's called the law of small numbers. And that basically says that there are these very common numbers, and they just turn up in lots of places. So the number 3 occurs a lot of times because it's a very simple number, and so there's a lot of things which we can count to 3.
And it's in the Fibonacci sequence.
It is. So the golden ratio is similar. It's one of the simplest of this other family of numbers. I think where it'd be nice if people sort of said, okay, how can we take this further?
They needed to be expanded upon.
There's actually a whole world of these numbers. Another way to do it is to take, instead of taking the 2 numbers and adding them together, take 3 numbers and add them together. That gives you another sequence, which is called the Tribonacci, 3 rather than Fibonacci.
Not named after anybody. That's
just
taken
a
from
corruption
that.
Of
right.
So there's a whole family and sort of different form of numbers. In mathematics, these numbers are the solutions of polynomials with integer coefficients. But there's a lot more happening, and the Fibonacci numbers should be like an invitation to investigate more of this mathematics. Rather
so kind
than,
of start simple and...
Yeah. People forget that mathematics is really the study of the simplest things we can understand.
Well, it's you're saying investigating, and it reminds me of this show that I mentioned, you know, the MathNet on PBS when I was a kid, you know, probably six, that, you know, that I remember the Fibonacci numbers. But, you know, it was like a group of kids that solved crimes, I think, with, you know, using numbers. So, I mean, that's kind of the same thing, right? You know, introducing math to young kids to show them it's cool.
Yeah.
Okay, well, Fibonacci Day, Friday, November 23rd, which is actually the first four numbers in the number sequence, 1, 1, 2, 3.
Yeah, so. I did work that out eventually.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you, Dr. Harris.
Thank you.
Dr. Edmund Harris is a professor in the math department at the University of Arkansas. I spoke with him in my studio last week. This is Ozarks at Large.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me is W. Dale Warren from the University of Arkansas. And you are here with me at the – first of all, welcome back.
Thank you very much, Kyle.
You're here in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio because this is the time of the semester, just before finals for students, where the final symphony and wind band concerts take place.
You got it. We're hitting the home stretch finally.
But it strikes me that you don't even – your year is so compact, your semester is so compact, you don't really think about the home stretch.
Well, I mean, certainly not, because you're right. The schedule is intense from here till commencement in the spring even. And then the summer programs are, you know, week to week. So we don't really ever stop. That's true.
But on Monday night, November 19th, the final concert of the semester.
That is correct. You're going to get both the symphonic band and the wind symphony on stage the same evening. You're even going to get those two groups combined for a number.
Right. And we have something that had originally been scheduled earlier in the year, but then you kind of did some adaptation, right?
Well, we started on the Wind and the Lion for the first concert at midterm. And that's one of the most epic movies, if you know that film at all. And it just didn't work with the wind ensemble, you know, one on a part. And we needed more sound. We needed more energy and more intensity. So, you know, we came up with the idea, hey, put both groups together. They rehearse at the same time, just in different spaces. And now on Fridays, we have what the students have dubbed Mega Band. And Mega Band is going to play Wind and the Lion. So we're going to have 90-plus musicians on the stage. Yeah, it'll be fun.
Well, before we talk about that, the evening on the 19th, we'll start with a symphonic band.
Gustav Holst, second suite for military band in F, which is one of our major staples. Second major piece that Holst wrote for the wind band, and of course it came out 2 years after the E flat, which was 1909. This one in 11, but it didn't get played till 22, so nobody even knew about it for about 11 years after he wrote it. But the coolest thing about it and between it and the first suite is all original music by Holst. In the second suite, only the first two measures are written by Holst, and the rest of it is basically English or British or UK folk songs.
The third movement, Song of the Blacksmith, you hear the blacksmith in there.
Oh, absolutely. The anvil is very present because the percussionist that plays the anvil is the blacksmith because he's using a big blacksmith hammer. I mean, there's no sparks and fire, but everything else is very authentic. It's just like you were in the blacksmith shop back in that time period where you're getting your horse's shoe worked on.
And so that's beginning. I should say, it starts with Holst. This is an all-star composer.
Oh, absolutely.
That you have. I mean, Brahms and Copland.
I mean, he's one of England's finest without question. But, I mean, you know, he wrote The Planets, and that's what he's the most noted for. But he has a ton of great wind band repertoire as well as orchestral, piano, vocal. I mean, he wrote for all genres.
Then you have Brahms.
Then we have Brahms. It's hard to beat Brahms. You know, he's one of the three German Bs, you know, Bach, Beethoven, and Brahms. And he wrote the German Requiem in German, not in traditional Latin, which was very unique for its day. And then Barbara Buehlmann extracted the opening called Blessed Are They That Mourn. Well, the text is Blessed Are They That Mourn. And it's just a stunning remembrance of one that is no longer with you.
On stage for that performance is Michael Moon, who's the graduate conductor.
He's one of four.
Right. What do you tell a graduate conductor? I mean, do you remember back when you were a graduate conductor?
Well, sure. It was only, you know, 100 years ago. But, I mean, Michael's in his second year, and he's one of our stars. He's a rock star. You don't have to tell Michael a lot. Michael's got an IQ of a million. Mm-hmm. He's a hard worker. He can't say no to anybody. That's his problem, if he has one. But, you know— He's very sensitive. He gets it. And this piece for him is a beautiful fit because he's a very lovely, eloquent, expressive conductor, and that's what this piece needs.
Then, intermission, and then comes The Wind and the Lion. Jerry Goldsmith, who's an Oscar winner, he won an Oscar for The Omen.
He did.
But he was nominated for this score.
That's correct. Yes. That's very good.
And this is sweeping.
You always blow me away with everything you know. Well, it is an epic. I mean, it's panoramic. It's Montana. It's Morocco, of course. It's Northern Africa, set in in the early 1900s. But it's when I saw the film, I was a senior in high school. It came out in 1975. That's my senior year. And I couldn't get over the cinematography. And I didn't even know what that word was then. But, you know, there's no CG then.
Right.
It's all real. Horses are running full tilt. They're falling down, throwing their riders. I mean, it's the epicness of the desert and, you know, the Atlantic Ocean and the Aborian Sea? I guess it's on the other side there. Mm-hmm. And so every scene is just a stunner. Your jaw drops. Go, I got to go there. I've got to go see this place. This can't be for real. But the music is so exciting and so romantic and so heart-wrenching. I mean, you want those tribesmen to get their land back from the British. I mean, you know, you're pulling for them. So it's a very emotional movie score, and the students are really getting into it.
After that, oboes. Oboes kind of the instrument that's going to take us through the rest of the show. You concerto for two oboes and band. You have Cheryl and Teresa.
Right. Well, it's oboe mania on campus. You know, November has been oboe mania month now for a long time. So we thought, well, why not just do the whole thing oboe? And, you know, Bob Mueller's doing oboe. It's his guest artist on the USO concert coming up. So it's an oboe fest. There's no question. But Cheryl's in town for oboe
from
mania.
Oregon.
Right, from Oregon. And, you know, she's a world-class player. And so we thought, well, we've got these oboes in town. Why not use them? So I didn't even know the Albinoni. I started talking to Tess Elaplane about what would be appropriate for, oboes and wind band. And she came up with the Albinoni, and I go, you know, he's pre-Bach. You know, he's 14 years older than Bach, but it sounds like Bach. I mean, you would swear Bach wrote it, and it's delightful. I mean, it's three completely different movements, but every one of them in the great Baroque career, you feel like, here's a harpsichord moment, and then, you know, here's an organ moment. It's just terrific, and the oboe parts are just insane. They're great.
Insane because?
Difficulty. There's so much black, and... But Tess, you know, I just came from rehearsal, and Tess sounds like $1 million. I mean, it's going to be great.
Tess, most people who follow music around here know Tess Delaplane.
Sure.
You have a faculty. Cheryl Denise Uricki, who is the other oboist.
Weffler is what – now she goes by Denise Weffler now.
Oh, okay.
Married name, right.
Oh, Uricki Weffler, right. She literally wrote the book on oboe playing.
A couple of them, actually.
Yeah.
That's right. She did. Now, she's a terrific author, and everybody goes after her to make their reads. She's a custom reed maker, not only to oboe but English horn, and she's written the book on that as well. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't even have a good word to describe her because she does so many things well. But, you know, great player, author, reed maker, plays in all these different ensembles in Oregon, teaches, college professor. I mean, she just does everything.
Then there's some Aaron Copland, Down a Country Lane.
Ben Chamberlain's going to come out and do that. We're calling it our sorbet moment between the oboes, you know, just kind of cleanse the upper palate. But you can't beat Copland. We needed something lighter, more beautiful, more tonal, you know, more melodic in this show because of how big the beginning and the end are. So that's why that's there.
Then they're back to oboe, Piazzolla. And something rather later for him, 1982.
Right, 10 years before he died.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, he's the tango master,
right,
as we all know. But, you know, Oblivion has become his big hit. Everybody knows Oblivion because it's a stunning piece. And, of course, you know, nobody in South America is bigger in the tango world than Piazzolla.
And so that's a fun piece to play, I'm sure.
Yeah. It's just gorgeous. It's marching. I call it the red hot tango. I mean, that's kind of the descriptor I have. It's the dancer. It's like Dancing with the Stars in their red dress, and the guy in the tuxedo. And it's
right.
Formal but fun and very close and very intimate. And it's hot. I mean, it you can't touch it with asbestos gloves kind of piece. Yeah, it's really neat.
And then you end with what I think is one of the most haunting pieces of music I've ever associated with a film. And that's the music from On the Waterfront. Marlon right. Brando, a very sad, sad movie.
Very sad. Well, it's about union violence and corruption among longshoremen in New York. And
what could have been. And
all that, yeah. Right. And, Brando delivers this incredible performance in it. I mean, and that's an all-star cast, too. Carl Malden, Lee J. Cobb, yeah. Rod Steiger. Eva Marie Saint, 8 Academy Awards for that film. I mean, it's just off the charts for 1954.
And then, of course, the music by Leonard Bernstein.
Right, the only movie score I ever wrote.
And it's
and they had
just,
to talk him into it.
Yeah.
He turned it down the first time.
But it fits so well.
It's incredible. I mean, it's Bernstein, of course, and it's incredible music. And we finally got a version for the wind band just this past year, or just this past spring, actually. So we were just so thrilled that Jay Bocook took on that challenge. But I'm not kidding you. You don't miss the strings. It's that good. I mean, it's the best thing Jay's ever done, in my view. It's ridiculously good.
The University of Arkansas Symphonic Band and the U of A Wind Symphony will perform Monday night at 7:30 at Walton Arts Center. The concerts are the final performances of the semester for the ensembles. I talked with W. Dale Warren earlier this week inside the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio at KUAF.
Later today on This American Life, a music professor believes that he's found a way to kill microorganisms with sound waves, and he starts to wonder if they could destroy cancer cells.
No chemo, no radiation, no cutting. You walk in and they have a large bulb and they turn it on for 3 minutes, and inside of a month you're done.
He teams up with a real cancer researcher, a serious one, and gets unexpected results.
This American Life, just ahead at 10 o'clock on KUAF 91.3 FM.
It is Sunday, November 18th, 2012. I'm Kyle Kellams.
I'm Christina Thomas.
With us is Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
One of my favorite topics. Oh, wait, that's what I always drag in here on Sunday. Architecture.
Mm.
You know, as you know New Orleans, Kyle, that the names of the architecture there are as colorful as the city itself. Shotguns and camelbacks and double galleries and Creole cottages. Well, there are names like that that go with architecture in the Ozarks.
Dog trot. Yeah.
Single pen, double pen, saddlebags, and dog trots. And there's an exhibit open right now at the Shiloh Museum in Springdale that will tell you what all those things are.
They have to do with architecture?
Sure. They do.
They're styles.
I mean, saddlebags. That's, what a horse, right?
Okay, here's the concept. All of the architecture for log structures in the Ozarks came up from the upland south.
Okay.
And people didn't want to be different. They wanted to do it the way they'd learned to do it and the way they'd always done it. So they built a single room log cabin, was called a single pen.
Okay.
Four walls and a roof. Mm-hmm. A double pen is two single pens set next to each other. Two front doors, everything symmetrical. Saddlebag.
Oh, I was just going to say, my favorite is dog trot, where you've got the unit sort of cabin here and a cabin next to it, but in between is this breezeway.
Right.
And that's the dog trot.
And saddlebags is a double pen, two rooms, but with one chimney in the middle instead of two. So it's on the spine of...
Okay, I'm on the spine of the chimney.
Right.
And so if you told someone that you were going to build something or you wanted something built, you could... This was shorthand for what you kind of... I want a dog trot because I want that breeze to come through the middle of the two living areas.
And really, if you think about it, the dog trot functioned much the same way as...
The shotgun.
As the shotgun. It was designed for the breeze.
Right. Shotgun houses which are so...
Which are long and...
Right, and the front door and the back door, it's a straight shot. So you could open up both doors and the breeze will just go through before air conditioning.
Or shoot a shotgun through one door.
Well, that's yes, obviously,
right.
Yes.
And I'm sure that happened in dog trots and saddlebags, too. Anyway, this exhibit is up at the Shiloh Museum. You know, they've got over 500,000, I think they've quit trying to count, photographs. And so Marie DeMaroukas has found some wonderful photos illustrating these things, and you can go and learn all about it. And our premise here is that they are open every day but Thanksgiving this week.
Oh.
So if you're bored, 10 to 5. Go there. It's free.
So you can go there on Black Friday and not have to worry about people elbowing you for a large screen TV. You can just wander and learn.
Or here's some other things you can do while you're on vacation and those of us here are here.
The Parade of Pastels, the Ozark Pastel Society show, is in both galleries at the Art Center at the Ozarks in Spring Day. They will be closed Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, okay. But they're open Monday and Tuesday, mm-hmm. 9 to 5.
Okay.
There's a discussion at 1 o'clock Monday at Crystal Bridges that I would love to go hear. I talked with Sarah Sagerlund, the public programs mm-hmm. coordinator. It's called Light Bulbs in Art and Society. And it's talking about how the evolution of light in art followed the evolution of light in technology.
So if you were painting at a time when you had sunlight and candles, the light right. would look different. But since Thomas Edison.
And it's related to See the Light, the luminous tradition in American sure. art that's on show there. But it starts with the paintings that use light as a spiritual sort of thing, and continues to the light sculptures and so forth that are in this exhibit. So that'll be fun. And Crystal Bridges is closed Thanksgiving Day, but they're open regular hours the rest of the week.
Won't be open Tuesday,
right.
because that's their normal day not to be open.
And then to cap it all off is on show at the Rogers Historical Museum, all about hats.
You talked to Gabe Land?
I did,
a
right.
couple weeks ago.
I bet you look fabulous in a hat.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Like I talked to Gay about, hats aren't as popular today as they once were.
No, I talked to a lovely lady about her hats, you know, and how she was a military wife and you never went anywhere without a hat. You know, and you didn't take the hat off until you got home.
Right.
That changed.
Yeah. Times are changing.
But you can find out all about that. They're closed Thanksgiving Day and Friday and Saturday, but they're open Monday through Wednesday. And all of that is my favorite word.
Free.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
'12 has been the year of the Giants when it comes to sports. In February, the New York Giants became the NFL champions by winning the Super Bowl. Last month, the San Francisco Giants won the World Series. And just last week, the Yomiuri Giants won the Japanese equivalent of the World Series there to claim the championship. Inspired by these sports champion Giants, here's a collection of other giant moments in history and culture. See how many you can identify.
Hello, Jet. What do you want?
My welcome in, babe.
Fine.
Why, that's wonderful, Jet.
Everybody thought I had a duster? Y'all thought old Spindletop and old Burke Burnett was all it was, didn't you? Well, I'm here to tell you it ain't, boy. It's here. And there ain't a dang thing you gonna do about it.
Istanbul was Constantinople, now it's Istanbul, now Constantinople. Been a long time gone, Constantinople, now it's Turkish delight on a moonlit night. Every gal in Constantinople lives in Istanbul, now Constantinople. So if you a date in Constantinople, she'll be waiting in Istanbul.
Probably he means no harm.
He's very, very short on charm.
You have a great gift for Ryan.
Yes, yes. Somebody that.
Enough of that!
Has he? Are there rocks ahead?
If they are, we all be dead.
No more rhymes now, I mean it!
Anybody want to feel it?
Yeah!
Which is why you have got to stop, General.
Let's get it closer!
Don't shoot! Don't shoot!
Hogarth!
Hold your fire!
The boy's alive?
It's a trick! Launch the missile!
Are you mad, Mansley? All units, stand down!
I smell the blood of an English rabbit.
Look, Mac, let's get this straightened out. You're the giant in the story of Jack and the Beanstalk, aren't you?
Well, yes.
And the giant in Jack and the Beanstalk wasn't after no rabbit now, was he? He was after Jack, right?
Well, I guess maybe that is white.
All right, then. He is Jack. It's a lie! It's a lie! My name is, Aloysius!
No! It can't be!
What is it?
It can't be!
What did you do, Ray?
Oh.
It's the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man.
There's a little fact! It's gonna be, I believe! The Giants from the Pellet! 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 Bobby Thompson hits into the lower deck of the left field stand! The Giants from the Pellet!
If you can identify all 10 of those giant references, congratulations. If you can't, you can go to our webpage, ozarksatlarge.com, to find a list.
The University of Arkansas Fort Smith Percussion Ensemble and Marimba Band will perform tomorrow evening at 7:30 p.m. in Breedlove Auditorium on the UAFS campus. The full-length concert will feature works by prominent composers. It will also feature compositions for a variety of percussion instruments. There is no admission charge. For more information, send an email to josh.knight@uafs.edu.
So tomorrow night you can have percussion in Fort Smith, and before that on the University of Arkansas campus in Fayetteville, you can give blood. The Donor Games, a blood drive for the Community Blood Center of the Ozarks, is tomorrow from 9 until 3 at the Bloodmobile, which will be parked near the Fine Arts Center. You'll get a free t-shirt if you give blood. For more information, cbco.org. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Magazine.
Magazine. Mount Magazine. Magazine?
Not Mount Magazine, the town magazine.
Is it close to Mount Magazine?
It is close to Mount Magazine.
All right.
But it's not Mount Magazine.
Okay, good to know.
It's close to Boonville, where you were this week. And
okay.
Want to remind listeners that there's a chance for you to win two tickets to the opening performance of Billy Elliot at Walton Arts Center and four movie tickets to any area Malco movie theater. And brand new, still warm off the printer, a copy of the 2013 Tim Ernst calendar.
It's a really good prize package.
That's right. The question that I asked on Friday's show, and I'll ask again here, you send your answer to ozarksatlarge@gmail.com. All correct answers will be put in the ceramic cow. One winner will be won. There are 50 state capitals.
Right.
Two of those state capitals border another state.
Okay.
Carson City, Nevada, and Trenton, New Jersey. But one other state capital borders another country. Which state capital shares a border with another country? ozarksatlarge@gmail.com. And I will tell you this, within about 40 minutes of asking this Friday at noon, about 15 correct answers had already come in.
Really?
But go ahead. Put your name in there.
Okay. All right.
And that opening night for Billy Elliot at Walton Arts Center, Tuesday, December 4th.
Weekend Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
Happy Sunday.